Hey, what's up? This is John Norris, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network.
Champagne.
Today is May 22nd, 2012. I'm Jimmy Carbone on Beer Sessions Radio. Here we are in Roberta's in Bushwick with Jen Swartman from The Blind Tiger. How
Hi,
are
Jimmy.
You?
I'm doing really well. How are
Great.
You?
I'm awesome. And here we are. I don't have my headset on, so I don't hear a thing, but I'm trying to talk
I don't
to
hear
you guys.
Anything either.
Yeah. So cool.
Technical difficulties.
So we got Matt Bean here from Men's Health. He is a great beer writer, a real fan of beer, and we're really happy to have you on the air tonight.
Awesome to be here.
Thanks for coming on, man. So you are a star from Savor, the great... beer event in Washington, D.C., which is coming up in June. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it kind of felt like beer prom in a way because the building itself was just ridiculous. They had these huge columns going up about 200 feet, just lit up like it was some kind of gala event. And brewers from all across the country, members of the Brewers Association group were there pouring some of their finest stuff. This was not one of those festivals where it's just distributors hanging out or people that are volunteering that might not know as much about the beers. The brewers all rolled out and they got decked out.
That's one of the requirements, right?
Yes. Yeah. You can't just find a guy on the street that likes beer and shove him into the booth. So there were really knowledgeable folks on hand to tell you about all these beers, really excellent beers themselves. I mean, this was not just the run-of-the-mill, this is our volume play type juice. And then they had, of course, the salons on the side, which is what I was a part of. This was a pair-off. They called it a smackdown last year, but this year I guess they're trying to go kinder and gentler, although so far the build-up has been pretty hot and heavy. They're just trying to call it a pair-off this year, but I think it's going to be a smackdown. We've got Jeff from DC Brow, Chuck from Green Flash, Scott from Amagang, and then I'll be representing... the non-brewers, so it is kind of intimidating for me, although last year...
And defending your title,
defending
right?
my crown. I won by just one vote last year. The basic format is that they give you the dish. This year's is a rhubarb crisp, which we have here in front of us. It's delicious.
They gave you a recipe?
They gave us the recipe.
Okay.
That was actually from Adam from Monk's. He competed last year. Last year was bacon-wrapped dates. Which is they're just phenomenal, and what I chose to pair with that was a sour from Two Brothers. I'm from Chicago, and I'm a huge fan of sours, and I had some of the funky stuff that they were putting out at the time called Askew. Really excellent beer, and I just love those guys. So they came out, we had a good old time. It's a blind presentation, so everyone kind of votes based on how the pairing tastes, and then you get up and kind of bloviate and blather on and try to sway the crowd in your favor. And I'm not sure that my pairing was necessarily the best, but I really tried the hardest in terms of swaying public opinion, and it was successful. This year is going to be a tough one, though.
Wow, man, that's pretty cool. Do you do a lot of beer and food pairings, Matt?
Well, I drink a lot and I eat a lot, so I may not set out to pair beer with food, but it sort of happens when you got an appetite like mine, and you can put food away.
So what did you bring for us tonight?
I've got a few different styles of beer. I'm not sure any of which I'll necessarily choose individually, but I've got a Goose. I've got a really interesting selection from Sam Adams Barrel Room. It's called the Stony Brook Red. It's Belgian style. It's really interesting. It's got some toasted oak to it. Jim is just doing some great stuff with that barrel room up there.
Let's try that. And I brought a Leipziger Goza. Let's try both of those.
Yeah.
And let's taste what we can of the rhubarb. What is this rhubarb thing that you brought?
My girlfriend Jisoo made this fantastic rhubarb crisp, which we got the recipe from Adam. She doesn't want to talk about it. She's shy.
Let's pass that around, and we'll all cut it and have a little bite. And we'll see what goes with this. Is it a savory rhubarb pie or a sweet rhubarb
pie? It's very sweet. It's got a pistachio crust, which I think it actually sort of changes the flavor profile just a little bit. So I'm going to pop this Sam Barrel Room here. Try not to put anybody's eye out.
I'm trying the Leipzig Goes. We did a bunch of sour events at Jimmy's number 43, and the Leipzig Goes is a favorite. I know it's a big favorite of Justin Phillips at Beer Table in Brooklyn. Jen, do you know something about this beer?
I do. I can't say that I've had a huge number of Goes out there because there aren't that many to try. It's my understanding that this one, coming from Germany, is one of the last like original ones left. And then I have had a couple, in fact, in California. I had, Cascade out of Portland, Oregon was doing a summer Goes.
Ah, the Barrel. Yeah. Uh-huh. I love those guys.
That was on tap at the Tornado. Tiny Bubbles from Hollister, I think, is technically a Goes. And I've also had one that with truffle salt from the brewery out of Los Angeles before, out of a bottle. So it's
truffle
an interesting
salt.
It's an interesting style because it does involve salt. Mm-hmm. So there is like,
thank you.
There's sort of I I'm not a huge expert on the style. I'm just a fan whenever I get to try it because it's something totally
well the
different.
Reason I brought the Goza is that when Matt said he was bringing rhubarb pie, I didn't know if it was going to be sweet or mm-hmm. savory. And my first thought was, he mentioned sours, and I said, well, you know, I've got these really nice big bottles of Leipzig.
It's sour, but it's not as sour as like a Goos. So yeah, you could play with how much sour. And yeah, the salt enhancement
just seemed to me that this would be really food friendly. It could go savory, it could go sweet. Mm-hmm. And I like to make generalizations about beer. Some people don't, but I do.
Well, you have to have a hunch when you approach a pairing, you know. You can't eat forever that we'd love to try sometimes. And you can't drink forever and still stay standing. So you got to have some sort of hunch and then go from there, I would imagine. Although I'm not the greatest food and beer pairer. I wish I were better at it, like having that intuition.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an experience. But Matt, how do you approach it with a competition at Sabre? Are you going to go in with a hunch, or do you already go in with your beers ahead of time?
Well, I've got several hunches already, and some of this just is from last night, busting out a few things from the fridge just to sort of road test. I mean, I initially thought, you know, how would a nice stout do? I mean, you've got a very sweet rhubarb dish here with the pistachios. I thought maybe the caramel notes and the
stout. Roastiness, maybe?
Yeah, but it turned out... it turned out to not quite be there. I tried a
Did
couple
one
of,
drown out the other? Did, was it that
it was,
problem? Because that's
that
what you want to try to avoid.
The toasty notes were not in the right direction. They weren't in the sweet direction. So that's why I brought a barrel-aged stout today to try with it, because I thought that would round it out and give it a little bit more.
And the
more
bourbon sweetness
the
might
bourbon,
work.
So that's coming up. That's from Oblivion. We'll try that in a little bit. But one of the things that surprised me, I thought a nice IPA might pair well with it, but it's totally in the wrong direction. I know you've got some heady topper here. I just want to drink that out of principle, because it's great that it's available. What, the first week in New York, you said last week?
Yeah, just last week there was limited supply that came in to select bars in New York. I'm pretty sure Blind Tiger got some. I know Jimmy's number 43 did.
And I'm sure it disappeared.
I'm holding mine back. Mine will be on sale this weekend at Jimmy's number 43.
Check it out there until it's
Eddie
gone.
Eddie Topper from Alchemist. Yeah. Well, let's talk about that brewery, because you know our buddy Dave Broderick lives up there most of the year now, and we've heard about it. Jen, have you been up to Alchemist, or were you there before the big hurricane?
Yes, I have. I was up there one time. I didn't have a chance to have the whole experience and eat their food. But I drank a lot of their beer, and it was a great bar. And I've been a fan of, you know, all the beers I've had the chance to try, whether they're, you know, like little growlers that people would bring down to the Tiger and share, or now we have cans of Heady Topper that are showing up in the market. But I haven't been up there since it sort of took on its new manifestation, which is a place called Prohibition Pig. And it's not the same ownership, but there is definitely a partnership between what Chad Rich and Jeff Bauman are doing up there, and John Kimmick and his wife Jen, and the availability of the Alchemist beers now is going to be exclusive, aside from what he decides to can, will be exclusively at Prohibition Pig. And they hired the same staff back after the hurricane and everything, and so there is definitely a kindred force in it, even though Prohibition Pig is a barbecue restaurant. It's got really nice cocktails, from what I understand of what the plan was, and really good beer, too. So it's still a destination. It's different than The Alchemist, but there's like a common thread that runs through.
Where do they make their beer? Do they have a separate brewery?
Yeah. John had already started his production at the canning facility to be able to do these heady topper tall cans. And when the hurricane hit, I gather that his first batch was already produced. I don't know if it was in the cans or not, but that whole facility was not touched or bothered by the hurricane, thankfully. And yet he had a huge flooding problem at The Alchemist. And with that flood, he lost his ability to insure the brewery. And so, because I think the brewery must have been downstairs. So
it was.
So it meant that in Vermont, it's one of those states where you can't own a brewery and a bar or restaurant. You have to be a brewer or you have to be a restaurateur, one or the other. And he, of course, is a brewer. So he didn't want to just own a restaurant in the space where The Alchemist was. He owns the building with his wife. And so they needed to find an option. And, of course, their whole staff, who they love, was put out of work. And it was big. It was a mess. And so Chad, fortunately, had his business plan in order, was looking for the right space to do Prohibition Pig, his vision. And he had even approached John Kimmick long before there was a hurricane and actually asked him, you know, like, well, or actually just posed it, said, if you ever decide you don't want to do both, keep me in mind. And so then it all came to pass, and now it's been a great partnership. I can't wait to get up there and actually see it with my own eyes, but I hear great things already.
Well, there's a lot of awesome, you know, cult like you know, small breweries in America, and we'll raise our glasses to them, because
cheers.
You know, they're up against a lot just to stay in business sometimes. Well, on this pairing note, so I had the Leipzig goes with this awesome rhubarb pie. Cheers to you.
Cheers, GC.
And but I think my favorite, I like with this vintage Sam Adams Stony Brook Red.
It's a very mild sour. It's got the tart in there, but it's not a face melter, as I like to call them, which I think works because it would overpower the rhubarb
does
otherwise.
Does everybody have that? Here,
let me hand this around.
Yeah, I think that actually cuts through the sweetness of the pie. Better than the goza. I think the goza might have worked with more of a savory dish.
My concern is this year everybody's going to be bringing the thunder with the sours. I mean, that was really, it was a great pairing. They just pair so well with food, but also people love them right now. And if they haven't had them, you want to introduce it with food because it really cuts that. I mean, not everybody's going to sit down like me at 4 p.m. and bust open some, you know, lambic or some goose, but
yeah, you might.
Know, it's an acquired taste.
But it's also interesting because acidity plays such a role, and of course in wine, acidity plays a role. So it kind of sets it up for some nice pairings that are reminiscent of what wine can do.
Where did you get this beer, Matt? Have you had it for a while?
The Sam is relatively new. They just started their barrel room series 2 years ago. I was up there filming with Jim, and he walked me through the barrel room. It's a beautiful room, and it's in their original brew facility. I believe it's called Jamaica Plains in Boston. And he had these giant fooders that were just churning out what he called mother funk. And so we got a couple of pitchers full of some of this mother funk just straight from the vat, and we were just taking that right to the face as we were filming. I mean, it's just so much fun to get up with that guy because he really, you know, loves his craft. But lately they've started bottling this. Not only have they done the experimental series, which they did a goes as well as some other really esoteric types of beer, but they're doing the barrel room series. So it draws heavily on what comes out of those cultures. I mean, I suspect we may talk more about that in a little bit. But definitely I was surprised when I had this beer because of how well. I mean, I'm from Northern Illinois, so my dad always goes up there and brings me New Glarus, clandestine shipments of New Glarus. And when I was over in Belgium, the funky stuff at Motor Lambic was what really stood out to me the most. So the fact that some of this is coming out of a Boston area right now is pretty great.
That's cool. I'll tell you what, we're going to have to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes with a call-in guest from the West Coast, and we'll talk more about beer and fermentation on Beer Sessions Radio. Hey, do it now. Yeah, hey. Yeah, once I was a boy. Okay, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. To learn more about beer, beer styles, test your beer IQ, and find out about the beer cloud, go to GreatBrewers.com. We're also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 34 New York City beer bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. Check out GoodBrewerSeal.com. In studio guests tonight, we got Jen Swartman from The Blind Tiger and Matt Bean, editor for Men's Health. And he's the host of Spike TV's The Playbook. And we're also going to have a call-in guest, Candace Santaferrero from Frog Leaps Winery. And we have Claudia Joy Peel and Claire Harton in the studio. And we're going to be talking about fermentation in a few minutes. So Matt's here. He's warming up for Savor, that really cool beer event in Washington, D.C., coming up in June. When is it?
It's over the weekend, June 8th and 9th. And the session that I'm a part of is probably the last event on that Saturday, so it gets kind of rowdy. You definitely got some people that are walking sideways by that point.
So you're going to be in the Taste Off Challenge at Savor.
That's right. I believe it's from 9:45 until 10:30.
So we've been you brought in a sweet rhubarb pie. We've tasted it against a Goza, against a nice barrel aged kind of sour red from Sam Adams. And how do you go about approaching this when you're at the competition at Savor? Do you have time to plan this out, or do you have to just grab beers and
Well, we've got to get our picks in by tomorrow, as a matter of fact, which is why this was such great timing. I get all these great minds here in the room to talk through this, and hopefully none of the competition is listening, because they're gonna see which way the winds are blowing.
Hopefully you've got a few tricks up your sleeve.
Yeah, maybe I'm misdirecting.
Us, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm definitely looking to pair this with some Michelob Ultra. Anyway,
in my work. What's you said you brought a stout as well?
Yeah, let's give that a try.
Yeah, so far for me, I mean, Jen, what's your favorite pairing so far?
I think that Sam Adams barrel aged, yeah. Nice level of sourness in it, and it does work with the rhubarb. So I'm a fan of that. But I'm kind of curious. What you said this was a barrel aged stout?
Yeah, so this is an oak aged stout fermented with vanilla beans.
And who's this from?
It's from Dover, Delaware based Old Dominion.
Okay.
I've actually never had this before, but I'm looking forward to how it tastes. Because as I mentioned, the stout itself, I tried an oatmeal stout last night, and it just wasn't the right
kind. I like the barrel-aged idea, at least. Let's see how it plays out.
Jen, have you heard of Old Dominion before?
I have. I'm not super familiar, but they've been around for an awfully long time, I think.
You know, it's cool. Sure, this rhubarb pie, it's on my napkin. I have a fork. And it's kind of like mushing into the napkin, and I just had some of that, and now I want to have the stout.
Do you see what I mean? The stout has that toasted flavor that it washes away the rhubarb well, but it also completely dominates the sweetness.
Well, it's like the vanilla. I mean, it's like vanilla bean. That's what I taste. This is some things that we do. And Matt, you're really good at it. This is a lot of fun checking this out. Let's go to the next step. I mean, we've got a sour beer, you know, this barrel-aged red from Sam Adams. And we've got some people coming on the air and in the room tonight who are kind of, in one sort or another, fermentation experts. And Claudia Keel, come on up to the microphone. Hey, we know you for a lot of things, but what is fermentation? Because it takes many forms.
So, yes, most people think of beer when they think of fermentation, but most of the food that we have that we know and like even olives and cheese and yogurt and other kinds of things, they're made with the same microorganisms and yeasts sometimes, or some differences, but these microorganisms is what we owe all the great flavors of many of our foods.
So in a natural state, fermentation is good for us, right?
Oh yeah, because they add actually more, they preserve the food, as we know in beer, but they also add extra nutrients. So there are different nutrients when a food is fermented.
What kind of nutrients?
Well, in general, non-alcoholic ones for sure. There's enzymes, there's added B vitamins, which is also in beer, and it preserves the vitamin C and other kinds of nutrients that are already there in the food, and rather than degrade them. So you get a lot of sometimes vitamins as well, and you get probiotics, natural, the microorganisms.
Good for your digestion.
And then we get the good flavors, of course.
All right.
Absolutely.
Matt, does this ever come up in your travels? Do you ever talk about fermentation?
I actually worked in a biolab in college. So one of the organisms that we used was Saccharomyces cerevisiae. We used it primarily to make point mutations in the G2M transition of cell replication. Basically, I tried to cure cancer, and I didn't. So then I just went into journalism. But we had these grand plans at the time to try to mess with Saccharomyces cerevisiae and splice in other fun substances to see what we could get it to emit out in the wild, and it failed miserably. On the topic of fermentation, one of the things that I've been paying a lot of attention to lately are bugs and Pediococcus, and obviously Brett, and the challenges that some brewers face with trying to keep their sour production sanitized, or at least distinct from their standard beer production, because they're very persistent.
Cross contamination is a huge fear.
So much of making beer is keeping things clean, right? Mm. You're working with some kind of yeast, and you want to have a consistent outcome. So when you're not dealing with that, you're opening it to a can of worms, which some of us like.
Yeah.
Like, I like this red. I like the Goza.
Worms.
You think is the Goza made with like some kind of wild yeast, or is it more of a controlled fermentation?
Well, there's a whole series. I mean, beers were all originally wild fermentations, mm-hmm. that became cultured, and they use those. But so there's a whole tradition of still wild fermented beers. So you just sort of take your chances with what's in the air.
Claudia, this is a question I've been dying to ask you. Okay. So I read some fantasy children's literature, okay? So in the old days, is it true if an apple dropped on the ground and it kind of went through a fermentation, then a deer ate it and they stumbled and people saw that perhaps the deer was having a good time? Would that really happen? Could just apples on the ground start fermenting?
Yeah.
And if you ate them, would you get a buzz?
Actually, all very ripe fruit contains some alcohol. So, and most fermented food, and very like minuscule amounts. So, but certainly very ripe fruit contains more alcohol, and animals can get drunk just like we can.
And then what about the bear story? So I'm a bear. I see there's like honey, and it's in a hollow log, and there's been a lot of water, and it's been sitting there, and it gets natural yeast. And the bear goes in and starts drinking it, and he starts getting drunk. Could that happen too? Just a naturally fermented mead like that?
Yes. Yeah, and I've heard stories where they've seen animals and bears seemingly drunk. So I don't know all the details, but certainly that happens naturally in nature. Some people surmise that that's basically how it all started. They observed it happening in nature.
And I can't think of the specifics, but I've heard stories where they watch certain species that would go back for more.
Yeah.
So they would naturally, they'd try it, just, to try it, and then they'd find that if they had a choice, they would go towards the alcohol. So.
There are certain animals that do consciously ferment their food in some way or fashion. It could be, and they could even be alcoholic food. So,
like an what? Example.
Examples.
I didn't prepare that, but I do know that even when you, even the idea of the squirrel burying their nuts, mm-hmm. it sort of goes through a slight fermentation and they can take it up. But I actually don't know examples offhand, but they're well documented in a lot of scientific
welfare, and naturally it makes sense because they're preserving the food. So if they only have limited supplies certain times of the year, if there was a natural way that they could evolve and save it for later, makes a lot of sense.
I mean, other fermentables that we know are things like kimchi, which I love, and I still think it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Much more interesting than sauerkraut, yeah.
So but that's all with like the natural yeasts that are on the cabbage and the other vegetables, and it gives this great flavor, just like you get this great flavor in beer.
Do you make anything that's fermentable, any special healing brews or anything?
Yeah, well, I really want to get, the old tradition of beers was not just using hops and barley, but using a lot of herbs. And they both had medicinal values and maybe even some
aphrodisiac,
slightly narcotic, and other, constituents in them. But for food, I actually ferment a lot of different kinds of cabbage, krauts, and kimchis. Most cultures, there's cortito in Mexico with different, and there are different spices with every culture. And there's a lot of what they consider non-alcoholic brews, like kombucha and other kinds of water kefir and things like that. They might have even a little bit of alcohol, depending on how long they go.
You know, actually at the Blind Tiger, one of the challenges when our chef, who's been with us now for over a year, came on, that Dave Broderick posed to him, was he wanted to see as much fermented food incorporated in. So the challenge is to try to incorporate an element that it has something to do with fermentation. Now it can be loose, you know, he cooks with beer, but he has incorporated kimchi and he's made some cucumber relishes and things like that lately. So it's kind of, he's always pointing out the fermented element, trying to incorporate more and more of that into the menu.
Yeah. One of the things I'm really excited about right now is the growing adoption of wild and spontaneous fermentation techniques here in the States. I mean, you go over and check out Cantillon, and they just are this temple to the process. Yeah. And they've got the cool ship upstairs with, you know, the louvers. You did?
Yeah.
I'm jealous.
Yeah.
You know, you can find that now up at Allagash.
Jeff O'Neill's building a cool ship in Peekskill, much closer, too.
So it's becoming increasing, and apparently our ambient bugs can keep up. I mean, the stuff they're putting out, I'm not going to say it's like Cantillon just yet, but it's getting there.
Well, it'll never be exactly like that,
sure.
but that doesn't mean that a great spontaneously fermented beer or a bunch of them couldn't be produced, especially in environments that do have a lot of maybe fruit trees like Brussels used to have in its region and all that.
Absolutely.
Hey, I think we have a guest from a calling guest. Candace, are you on the air?
I am, and I've been having so much trouble keeping silent because we actually deal with a lot of naturally fermented things in the place where I work, so this is very exciting.
So tell us some of the naturally fermented things you deal with.
I'm sorry?
What are some of the naturally fermented things that you deal with?
So, first of all, our wine. I am the farm production and market coordinator at Frog's Leap Winery. So we've got, on top of all of the wine that we make, we also have a 5-acre farm on the property. We are not certified biodynamic, but we participate and use all of the biodynamic preparations in all of our planting and in our entire farm ecosystem. So a lot of that also deals with fermentation in the soil. And we've got soil fermentation. All of our wine is also made with, we don't inoculate any of our wine. So our fermentation barn in which we ferment all of our wine is now a naturally fermenting barn, so it's pretty exciting. I also deal with a lot of the plants that grow on our facilities and figuring out what to do with them. So making lacto fermented krauts and pickles, and you know, we've got 5 acres of growth, so we've got 2 acres of orchards. So there's lots of cider to be made. We've got now I would say about 14 hives on 2 different vineyard properties, so lots of mead to be made. and, you know, those are things that we don't necessarily, you know, sell outside of our property. They kind of stay.
So you make a natural mead. That's kind of what I was talking about with the bears and stuff. So I was gonna say, is there a simple recipe if I'm at home? What could I make and just kind of real simple natural fermentation and get some alcohol? Would that be mead? Would that be the first step?
I'm sorry.
Sorry, Candace, I was asking.
Well, yeah, mead is arguably honey was the first discovery of fermentation in kind of the natural world. So, you know, definitely.
So how long has Frog's Leap been around, and how long have you guys been biodynamically farming?
So we are not certified Demeter. We farm more biodynamically in our garden. Our vineyards are all organically farmed. And we dry farm all of our vineyards. But Frog's Leap has been around since the early 80s.
Okay.
And we've been on our property now in Rutherford since 94. upon which we've restored an old, what was an old fermentation barn from the late 19th century. We've restored it back to its original purpose.
So is that where our fermentation barn. Is that where the, so that's where all the natural yeast is that's inoculating mm-hmm. your wine? In that old
Absolutely.
Barn? Ah, so
Absolutely.
See, we talk about these environments. And
don't kill the spiders.
Yeah, don't clean yeah. it too much. Yeah.
So one of the talks, Candace, this is Claire, one of the things that brought us into Jimmy's studio for Beer Sessions was we started a kind of round robin by email with Claudia Keel and Jimmy of sort of all these benefits of fermentation and beer being one of the sort of most prominent ones that's lasted through the history. So we look back all the way to ancient civilizations. The first recorded recipe is a beer recipe. And we go up to people like Louis Pasteur, and he actually, according to Paul Mankiewicz, the Gaia soil scientist, tells us about how it was actually him studying beer and wine microbes that he actually comes up with his medical discoveries. There's sort of this long history, but we've lost so much of our fermentation notion of how fermentation actually and what it does to our guts and how it's really health beneficial. And so we pulled Claudia into the discussion because she can help us look at that aspect. But kind of we're in the time right now where we're all recognizing that beer and wine are actually and some artisanal cheeses, and now the rise in kimchi and all these other fermented foods, that we're kind of re-embracing fermentation as a role in our diet. And luckily, it didn't die out through, really, beer and wine were two of the, and vinegars were some of the central places. And I guess that was one of the things we talked about, and Claudia, you could jump in on this one, just how there's this rise right now in a reappreciation of probiotics and the health benefits that come through fermented foods.
Yes, it's...
Candace, do you want to say anything to that?
Yeah, Your generation, Candace, how are you seeing it amongst you and your friends out there in California, having moved from Brooklyn, the sort of rise of appreciation of fermentation in foods?
It's fascinating. I mean, I think the Bay Area in general is just a really fascinating place for food. Napa itself has definitely been around for a while, but there's, the next generation of winemakers, they're making bread from cultures that they've been cultivating for, years and years, and they're, fermenting these wild ferments in their own kitchens, and I'm beginning to see actually a lot more interest in the younger generation, especially of winemakers, and I have a handful of brewers out here who are really interested in the natural fermentation and the wild fermentation thing. It's one of those things. I think that generationally, there is no line for it generationally. There's no denying the fact that fermentation is a living process. It's a life cycle. And so I think especially once you start to talk to people about fermentation out here, it gets people really excited. And somebody will always bring up, the kombucha culture that they have sitting in their cabinets, or, the sourdough bread that they're making. But it's all around us. It's truly all
awesome.
Around us.
Hold on, Candace, for 1 minute. We're just going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
Sorry, guys. Light
the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today, staring at the fire for hours and hours while I listen to you play your love songs all night long. Windows are illuminated.
Hi, this is Michael Gonzalez, writer from Complex.com, and you're listening to Heritage Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm here with Jen Swerber from Blind Tiger, Matt Bean from Men's Health. Did you ever write for Playboy, Matt?
I never have, but there's a lot of cross-pollination between men's magazines, so you never know.
Well, the funny thing was that ICP, the ICP.com, one of the award winners this year at the Book Awards was an author. He wrote a story called Beer Wars, which was in Playboy last year. It was about Steve Hindy at Brooklyn Brewery. It's pretty cool. So you're a writer. You write for many things. How often do you actually get to write about beer?
Well, we do have a great blog over at menshealth.com called Guy Gourmet, which, you know, among other things, was nominated for a digital ASME Award, American Society of Magazine Editors. It's kind of like our Oscars. And among other things, we cover beer, wine, and spirits on that blog. So that's kind of an inexhaustible opportunity to write, because you're never going to run out of megabytes on the interwebs. But I do try and am trying more and more to write about the culture around beer, not just the beer itself. There are folks out there that are far better at understanding beer, tasting beer, certainly making beer, if you've had any of the stuff that I've put together at 3 a.m. But the culture around it and the people around it, I think, is what I'm really interested in the most.
That's great. Well, Jen, we've got our heady topper now, Alchemist.
Yum.
We have two cases at Jimmy's number 43. So
we're drinking 25% of your allotment for New York City then.
So what do you guys think
of this
beer?
I feel very lucky.
Listen, I want to go from fermentation to cult beers, because there's always these beers you can't get them in your state. For New York, it's Russian River, and I don't know.
You can get those in Pennsylvania right out where I have a house, though.
But I don't think you get a whole...
But
I don't think they have a huge supply even there. It's not like it's always sitting on the shelf waiting for us.
You don't end up with the Elder. I mean, and if they do have the Elder, they put it on their their down days so that they bring people in and it goes immediately.
I just came from a liquor store in Los Angeles where... they had a stack of Elder, and I said, hey, do you get this very often? And he goes, people call in every Tuesday to see if they've gotten it, because they know if they do get it, it's going to come in on Tuesday. And that Tuesday, I happened to grab a couple
bottles. About cult beer, so this Alchemist. Matt, you said that you've been to the Alchemist in Vermont. You've had this at the brew pub, the old brew pub.
Yeah, so
what do you think about it in cans? Like, if you've got a cult beer, is it worth shipping it to other states? Is it worth... you know, putting it in a can, and how does it come across?
Well, I think, you know, the question that you're asking is ultimately one, it's a business decision by the breweries. New Glarus is a great example. They expanded to Chicago, and from what I hear, everybody had their hand out. And they just didn't, you know,
they did an expansion that actually came out this way for a while, time ago, and they retreated from all that.
Yeah,
and
they said, screw it, let's just be awesome at making beer in the state in which we live. It'll be fresh, it'll be to people that
we
know.
And if anybody wants it from outside, let them clamor.
Let them smuggle it in.
Yeah. Let them come to us. So reason to go to Wisconsin.
The Heady Topper, I think, is a fantastic beer in the can. You know, there's definitely a lot of verbiage on the can encouraging you to not pour it out of the can, to retain that sort of hop aroma.
I don't agree with that, by the way.
You know, it's marketing.
But so they're saying you should just drink it straight from the can.
Yeah, I don't think you can smell enough out of that little hole that you're drinking through.
We have two more.
I really don't. I think you're actually losing a lot of the flavor.
The cult beer, guys.
The aroma.
The aroma and flavor components are that you brew them in separately anyway, right? Cool. So theoretically, you're going to continue to save the flavor saver.
It's been saved in the can, and then you should drink it as soon as you open it. And I think you should pour it into a glass and move it around and let those aromas be there for you.
I think that a can, now
entirety.
I've been convinced a can's a good delivery vessel.
It's
for
great
sure.
delivery vessel.
And I like
Dales.
It in a glass. Yeah.
And the glass is great. And here's the thing about IPAs, though. They're different from, you know, another cult brewery that I go to all the time when I'm back in the Midwest is Three Floyds, because they have Dark Lord Day, and for a while they had Alpha King or Zombie Dust. And I remember going to get a case of Zombie Dust. Somebody was telling me that they were selling for $26 for a 12-ounce bottle.
Wow.
On eBay, which of course few breweries will encourage you to sell their wares on eBay. But
exactly
there are all these people lined up that you could tell they didn't know anything about beer. They were there to just buy
and
a case.
What I'm saying is maybe the cult beers aren't really worth running after. Let me finish. What I want to say is there's so many great new breweries in so many regions. And, you know, you kind of want to drink local. But I want to bring Candace back in out in California, because rather than just having a cult beer from another state, I want to have a mead that Candace makes at Frog's Leap in California. Would you do that for me?
Go visit her.
I'm actually drinking a Pliny right now that I just went up to my local liquor store and picked up.
It's
as
so
you guys
good.
Are talking about
rubbing
this,
it in.
But we do have we've kind of just brewed some mead, me and some of the other farmers that I work with.
How did it turn out?
You know, it's an experiment. We've been doing some experiments with mead and with cider. So that's kind of an
How did you make, if you made it, just tell us, just walk us through how you made it, because I want to know how to make like a simple farm mead.
A simple farm mead. Well, you basically, I mean, you start with harvesting the honey straight out of the hives, which is quite a process. That takes, you know, about a day or so. You got to spin it straight off of those, off of
So it's nice raw honey.
Yeah.
Coming right
exactly.
out of the hive.
And then you kind of just let it sit. I mean, you.
Did you put it in the same?
The mead that I've done is I've added other fruits to it, so other fruit juices, so you get a little bit of the liquid, and you let it kind of ferment that way, so the honey acts more as just a sweetener for the other fruit, so like a cider mead.
Did you ferment it in the magical barn?
In the magical barn.
Barn, you know, where the
wine.
Okay. No. Did it have the benefit of all that like amazing stuff that's in the barn fermenting your wine? So, right there, it's proprietary. That's pretty cool.
So you let it sit, and then you just let it sit for a while. How long do you let it sit for?
We kind of just let it sit for. I mean, we've let some of it sit for a couple years, and then we've still opened it. I mean, it's pretty good for a while. We've got some mead cider that's been sitting in the back of our cold storage for like 2 years now, and we're like, okay, we have to have a keg party, a mead keg party. But we typically bottle it about 6 months after going through the fermentation. We've fermented it mostly in stainless steel.
That's awesome. Candace, I'm going to ask Claudia.
We haven't done any barrel stuff yet, so...
Cool. I'm going to ask Claudia, too, because Claudia, is anything that you make with fermentation process that has alcohol in it? A quick recipe you can give us?
Yeah. Basically, you can make a simple mead at your home by mixing the honey with water and letting the natural yeast within the honey ferment, and you can put it in an airlock. So that's pretty simple.
Raw honey, Claudia?
Raw honey. Yeah, that's important in this case because it has.
So this is something that a bear could have drunk.
From a hollow oak tree. I'm sure lots and lots of bears have drunk.
Invite all your bear friends over.
So we hope to learn from the. My lesson is hope to learn from the bears and the deer and be able to just munch on fermented apples and
just go out there tasting in the wild, Jimmy. You'll come up with something new.
And maybe we'll inspire Matt to win the taste off. At Savor. So, Matt, one more time, tell us about Savor. When is it, and how can people learn more about it?
Absolutely. Check out the Brewers Association. Also, check out, let's see here, savorcraftbeer.com. The sessions are sold out, unfortunately, but I'm sure if you
have
to.
Matt, what's your Twitter handle?
MattBean1.
At MattBean1. And we're at beer_sessions and the radio. All right, so Good Brasil Bars in New York City, a Stone Extravaganza coming up Wednesday the 23rd at Standings Bar. Fibro Picnic this weekend. We're hosting it on Governor's Island, New York City, fibropicnic.com. And Kelso Beer Night at Stag's Head, Midtown Manhattan, Wednesday, May 30th. Tonight we're on our way to Brooklyn Brewery. It's the inaugural party for the New York City Brewers Guild, and they're going to tell you that soon they will be changing New York Craft Beer Week for the better. In closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. And thanks to our guests, we've got Jen, Claudia, Candace, Claire, and Matt, and more for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. First, our buddies from UK, Garen Baker, our best listener, came all the way from England. Garen, say hello. Come on.
All the way just to see us.
Hello.
Garen, what town are you from in England?
Just outside London, but I live in Plymouth now.
Plymouth. So we have a guy that listens to us in England all the time, and he's one of our biggest fans. And thanks so much. And again, I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Brie O'Connor. Guest coordinator, Brett Thompson. It's his last night. He's moving to Seattle. If you got a job in the beer industry in Seattle, Brett Thompson's the guy. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.